is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 574. I am, as I always am, Lisa Sheps, and she is, as she always is,
Miss Nicole Shiro.
My lovely co-host. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming live at KOOP.org. Folks, this is a pre-recorded show. Don't touch that dial.
Stay with us, folks.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. This world, oh yeah.
Here goes nothing.
There was a broken.
It is Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020. And on the show today, we have Girl Improved talking about the second annual Gift Fest, which is a female empowered film and theater festival. We also have from Salvage Vanguard Taji Senior and her one person show that's going to be done drive-in style. All that, and Nicole and I are going to have lovely conversations about the world of theater in New York, in Chicago, in London, and in Boysenberry, Connecticut. We'll be right back. Okay, that's a. I just love this super you thing.
Okay, Lourdes Lane, I'm kind of obsessed with her. There's something about her. She's like a little 80s Pat Benatar.
Yeah. Rocking,
like, and then she whips out her violin and like, I just want to be her friend and hang out in a room and watch movies and eat popcorn and jam on a violin.
Yeah. So that piece that we played is a Zoom recording from all the cast. There'll be a link on the website, offstageonair.com. But there's also a video that shows what they're doing in their pickup trucks. So this is in a drive-in theater, and all the women that are in it, there's a semicircle facing the audience, and each person is standing alone in a truck with a light on them as they're performing. And it's rained on them. It's done all sorts of stuff. It's just, I love the vim and vigor, which isn't the word I was trying to think of these women as they perform this piece.
I know, and I love, did you see all the little peanuts in there and all of them getting down too? There are peanuts in the cast.
There are peanuts in the cast. We should tell our audience that peanuts in Nicole language are little people, young people.
They are young people, under 18.
So this is interesting. They were all set to open in New York at the Daryl Roth Theater, downtown, and right before they were set to open, this happened. So obviously they were very inventive and are able to perform, and the audiences seem to love it, and the piece is just so wonderful. It's about finding the power inside you to get things done,
because we're all a superhero inside.
We are indeed. Mm-hmm. So that was good. And there's lots of stuff that you can see if you go to offstageonair.com. So Broadway Barks happened last week. Did you happen to see any of it?
I saw some like videos and little like Twitters of people online, because it did catch all up on the Twitters. And I do love me some doggies.
So Broadway Barks, for those that don't know it, is Bernadette Peters and Mary Tyler Moore put this together, and now it's just Bernadette Peters, to bring awareness and help rescue animals. Mm-hmm. In the New York City area. Last year, this always happens in Schubert Alley, and
correct.
Last year it was canceled because there was construction in Schubert Alley. This year it was canceled because of the coronavirus, but they did do it virtually, and I watched a good portion of it. There wasn't a whole bunch of entertainment value per se. They did replay the opening number from 2 years ago, which was, oh my god, I gotta remember what show it was. I don't remember, but they showed that opening number. But then they went on to, they had just Broadway star after Broadway star after Broadway star and their animals. And I forgot which Broadway star it was. Maybe it was Megan Hilty or somebody like that that said, oh, no, it was Randy Rainbow. I'm not ready to adopt an animal, but when I do, it's going to be a rescue animal.
Hey, man, that takes a lot to be honest that you're not ready for an animal. So I can completely respect that.
Yeah. So that was good. So these events.
What's so crazy is like how many animals are available at this point? Because when the pandemic started, all these animals were fostered and adopted. Shelters never saw anything so empty because people were at home and able to take care of animals.
Yep.
So I'd love to know what like numbers are because people have so much time to give me that.
Well, I'm sure they're out there. I did not do that research.
But no, I'm just curious brain.
I'm sure they did very, very well. I do remember the song now. It was obviously with Bernadette Peters. It was from Hello Dolly, and it was the song with Barnaby and his sidekick. I forgot what it was.
But
Cornelius. Step and out and watch off stage and on the air. You'll like it now and you'll listen now and you'll do it now. What can I fear?
You are on fire today.
That's the song that they played. So we're able, one of the other events that we have every year is Broadway Bears. And these are things that we can't see. Broadway Bears is going virtual with a Zoom event that folks can see.
I got to be honest with you. I was a little surprised that they're going virtual with the bearing.
Well, I mean, there's no rules on the interweb, I've never seen it, but I don't know. I don't think they go bear.
No, I've never seen like
they're not naked bear.
I've never seen butt naked, but
no,
I mean,
they're scantily clad. Anyway, it happens on August 1st.
Pretty close.
Yep. It's Broadway Bears Zoom In. It benefits Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, and it happens August 1st at 9:30 p.m.
Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Okay, here's the, we're going to talk about this and then take a little break for some music. So I don't know if you remember us talking about Salt Lake City. They opened theaters in June. Specifically, the theater I'm talking about now is the Hale Center Theater. And they are suspending the production of Mary Poppins that's happening
like
right
Mary
now.
Mary Poppins, isn't it? Yes.
Yes, but they're only suspending it for 4 days.
Well, you know why?
Well, because there was a complaint about lack of cleaning material and that one cast member contracted COVID-19. They're at the same time.
This is the second case of COVID in the cast.
They're crazy. They're also running Bright Star in their Black Box happening right at the same time. And I'm just going to read this paragraph. Hale has been seating patrons shoulder to shoulder, much as they did prior to the pandemic, though all the theatergoers have been required to wear masks. I just find this reprehensible. And
what I find crazy is the theater people want to go.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't want to be too stereotypical about Salt Lake City people, but I don't know why. It seems crazy that they would do that.
I mean, they're all making their own choice by going in, so I can't get mad at people. No one's forcing people to go into the theater. But I find it a little mind-boggling. I also don't even know what their case is or what their situation is. So, I mean,
I agree. We don't know, but you know, from our perspective,
but I don't know all the facts for me to make that quick.
That's true, but I did anyway. That's just the way I am. Okay. I said there was, one last thing. Playbill.com, Rodgers and Hammerstein, starting at 8 o'clock on the 24th. There's going to be a watch party for the Julie Andrews version of Cinderella. Now, we've talked about Cinderella before, and I talk about it as generational. You have people that are the Julie Andrews. You have people like me. No, you're not Julie Andrews.
No, I love the Julie Andrews. This movie.
Never seen it. So I'm going to get my opportunity. But I'm a Leslie Ann Warren kid. So that was the one when I was young and watching. And then there's the Brandy version, which I've often talked about as a wonderful version. By the way, speaking of Brandy.
I have that DVD. I do watch it a lot, actually. Yeah, Jason Alexander was in it, your man.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Victor Garber, I believe, was in it as well.
We love Victor.
I think we have to talk about
Victor once a week. When is he going to call us and be on the show?
I don't know. But Brandy, I didn't think had a last name, but she does.
She does.
She does. Do you know what it is?
Oh, shoot. I do. I know this because her brother, RJ.
All right. I'm just going to say it. Norwood.
Here you go.
Brandy Norwood. Did not know that. So let's take a little break. We're gonna just sit here in our own little corner, in our own little room for just a little while. And I've been trying to play entire cuts of songs, but due to time, I will probably have to be editing a lot of these songs out. But let's listen to as much as we can.
I'm as mild and as meek as a mouse. When I hear a command,
our very good friends at Girl Improved are doing their second annual Gift Fest, which is a theater and film festival for young women. And we spoke to her yesterday. Hopping into the Zoominator machine, Nicole and I have stumbled across Andy Kinsey of Girl Improved and a crew of young creators that are part of Gift Fest this year. And I would like to introduce one at a time, Talia Washington. Hi, Talia.
Hi.
We have Annika. Hi, Annika.
Hello.
And we have Zia Kinsey. Hi, Zia.
Hi.
And of course, we have Andy Kinsey.
Hello, hello.
Now, Andy and I have gone back, and Zia, for that matter, have gone back a long way because we work in concert with Ground Floor Theater and Girl Improved. So tell us, Andy, what's Gift Fest?
So Gift Fest is a short film and theater festival. It's called the Girl Improved Short Film and Theater Festival. And it is a student festival for students who are 18 or younger. We're trying to change gender parity in the entertainment industry. So to that end, we ask all submissions to have a minimum of 50% of the creative team must be female or non-binary, and a minimum of 50% of the characters on stage or on screen must be female or non-binary. And then we encourage the submissions to explore outside the realms of romance. And so we feel like younger people can help affect the changes that are needed in the industry by choosing to create projects that are gender inclusive.
Now, this is the second year of Gift Fest. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I know you took last year off, and I just have to get this out on the airways. Why did you take last year off?
Well, we took last year off because we were actually out of the country for a year. We were traveling with my husband's work, going from place to place to place, pretty much weekly, which is quite ironic because now that's something that would be impossible to do.
Right.
But so it was really hard to create a festival from far away. So we had to take last year off. But we're back this year with a bang.
Right. And this year is being done virtually. Is that correct?
That's correct. We originally were scheduled, as you know, to be at Ground Floor Theater on August 1st. But because we've all been having to make adjustments, we moved online to create an online hybrid drive-in fest. So we will
how
be
was
two
that?
Nights.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't really. I was just wondering how it was transitioning to the online.
So I think some festivals and places make it seem really easy, but it's quite hard, actually. So the online streaming platforms can be quite expensive, and we lucked up on a new streaming platform platform called Filmocracy, and they were willing to work with us because they're getting started and we're getting started. So it became this lovely relationship. And they are going to, they do the streaming thing, but they also work with a conference platform called Remo. And it, I think that's the name of it. Forgive me if I got it wrong. It's a different platform where it kind of feels like you're in a conference room. So rather than this, where you have different videos on screen like Zoom, you enter a virtual map and you go, oh, I'm going into the theater building. Oh, I'm going into the conference building. And then you get into the conference building and there are all these tables and you have a little stage up there. So it just gives
it's
it a more...
kind of like a video game in a way.
Exactly. And yeah. I was trying to find ways to make it more interactive, because I think what's happening right now is in the online trend is that you aren't getting the interaction with the audience. You don't really see them or feel them. And so I think it's very powerful for young creators to have that interaction. So I wanted to find a way to make it more viable.
I think that's great. What I love about it is the feeling of you're at a conference, that you walk into a room, you see a map, you decide where to go. I think that that's just wonderful. I think that would add a whole bunch to it. I'm really excited to see it. So this year, being online, it probably was bound to happen that the majority, if not all, of your entries were film-based rather than theater-based. And we have three of the filmmakers here with us, and I want to talk to each one of them about what they're doing. I want to start with Talia Washington. Talia, tell us about your piece.
Hi. So my piece is a short film called Missing Pieces, and I created it with my Youth Cinema Collective, which is like a group outside of school.
Great. And you shot your piece prior to COVID-19, so you're able to get people together?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I shot my piece in December, and then we premiered it in January.
Right. Now, you wrote and produced this piece yourself, correct?
Yes. I directed it and I wrote it with some help from Marcelo from Youth Cinema Collective. He's great. He helped me. And also my friend Jada, who was also on my production team. She helped me a lot with the writing, too.
Great. What do you like most about filmmaking? And actually, I'll just throw that to any of the three filmmakers here. But Talia, what do you like most about filmmaking?
I like being able to create something that... it's like art, but like in a visual form, like in a, like as a film, obviously.
See, what about you? What do you like being about, what do you like about being a filmmaker?
The combination of storytelling and the visual aspect is what really appeals to me, because I grew up as a always, you know, being in shows and that kind of thing. And then as I was older, I started getting really into photography. So kind of the intersection of those two creative aspects of me is film, because it's storytelling combined with photography. So that's what really appealed to it.
That's awesome. Annika, what about you?
I really like being able to like film like whatever, and being able to pay attention to like details and stuff of like what you're filming, basically, I guess.
Cool. Now your entry into GiftFest this year is a documentary, isn't it?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
So it's a documentary about autism, because I want to be a doctor when I grow up, and also because I really enjoy like medical related topics. So I decided to learn about autism and make a documentary about it. Anyway, so it was a really fun experience making that documentary, and I actually learned something about myself that I didn't know before. So,
well, that's great, and that's cool. The power of art and the power of film. Mm-hmm. Zia, we have a new picture, Zia, on the Zoom because we had some connectivity issues. Tell us about your piece, your entry into GiftFest this year.
So my piece called Removal Recommended, and it's about leg hair on women. I was inspired because I wrote this narrative about, it's like a spoofy horror short. And then at the end, you find out the thing that's chasing them is a woman with leg hair. And then afterwards, I was kind of looking up the statistics around how many women shave their legs. And I found out that it's the most conformed to beauty standard in the United States, more than any type of makeup or hair, more than even shaving your armpits. And I was just fascinated. And I had this question, like, why leg hair?
Well, that is great. I would love to sit and talk to you guys all day long. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. Andi, tell us the details about how folks can see Girl Improved Gift Fest and anything else that might be of note for this piece.
Of course. Yeah. So if you would like more information, you can feel free to visit our website, which is girlimproved.com. And that will contain all the details about what we're doing and where things are happening. We also have a very active Instagram. The handle is @girl_improved. So we have snippets and views of what's to come, and we highlight the different creators. So you can.
So the event is on August 1st, or is it?
August 1st through 3rd. So we actually have the screenings with the films. We also have a couple of workshops set up. One is shooting with a crew of one, and another one is about making a digital monologue. So we have two workshops on Saturday. One's in the morning, one's in the afternoon, and a screening in the evening. And the screenings involve a Q&A. And I think one of the great things about Gift Fest is that every filmmaker or every creator gets to do an introduction. We see their piece, and then we get to talk to them afterwards. So it's not a clump or a block of people. It's each student gets their own kind of focus. So then Sunday is also hopefully another panel. We're working on that one. It's called How It All Began, about creators who got their start when they were in high school or younger. And then we have an afternoon screening and then an evening screening. And then it culminates with a screening at Blue Starlight Drive-In on Monday evening.
How wonderful is that? Give folks the web address one more time.
Sure. It is girlimproved.com.
Great. Well, Andi Kinsey, Talia Washington, Annika, and Zia Kinsey, thank you so much for coming back to Offstage and On the Air.
Yeah, thank
you for having us. Yeah.
All right. Bye.
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 I can't wait to see that.
I know. They were so awesome and so adorable. And like, I really enjoyed that conversation yesterday.
So we recorded it on Zoom, and I'm so sorry that our audience is not going to be able to see their lovely faces, because it was just really great being able to speak to them face to face. I finally decided to go ahead and bite the bullet and get a Broadway HD subscription.
What'd you watch?
Pippin from 1981.
And?
Ben Vereen. Yes. It turned out this was, I didn't even know this was existed. It was a made-for-TV movie filmed in Canada.
I was like, Canada.
Oh, and it had Ben Vereen. It had the guy from, and I don't know his name, the All-American Hero guy played. Greatest American Hero guy. It had Martha Ray was the grandmother. And Cheetah Rivera as Fastrada. And she was amazing. She did an awesome job. She's a great Fastrada. So anyway, it was fun to see Pippin as it was done. And then the other thing that I need to mention is, I've mentioned this on this show so many times, no microphones. These people performed without microphones. They projected. There were floor mics or boom mics above head, but that was it. And you could tell that when they would turn their back, their voices would go soft. The only thing I didn't like was at the end of the show, my favorite ending is the original ending. I don't like the new ending. They must have had some sort of problem, because the voices sort of faded out. Then the video went still, and they just played a pre-recorded version of the last song.
I do love the Broadway HD. There's some really good stuff on there to watch.
There really is. And I'm actually looking forward to rewatching Indecent, which is on there. Rewatching Memphis. Mm.
There's just so much on there. There's a lot of straight plays on there that I want to watch.
Well, they added Into the Woods last week, and I told Mom to watch it, but it wasn't just the original Into the Woods. They added multiple versions of Into the Woods from England and everywhere else. And I'm like, okay, I love getting my weekly emails from them about like what they're giving out, like what they're adding this week, what they're doing this week for people who aren't members, because they're adding extra bonuses for everyone stuck in this pandemic. And it's great.
Let's take a break. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa
and Nicole.
All right, we're going to be really quick, and there's a couple of things that I want to talk about. First of all, we'll just have a little lighthearted quiz. There's a Broadway cookbook. Did you see this article?
No, I did not.
Oh, good, good, good. Hasn't come out yet, but I'm going to tell you the names of some recipes, and you tell me what show they represent.
Okay.
Officer Krupp Cakes.
Oh, well, that's got to be Officer Krumpke, right?
Mm-hmm.
Based on Krumpke? Mm-hmm. Officer, that's a great name for
a side story. Schnitzels with Noodles.
Oh, that's got to be Sound of Music, right?
Sound of Music, yep. Egg Rolls for Mr. Goldstone.
Oh, that's Mr. Goldstone.
That's Gypsy. Laurie's prize-winning tarts.
I don't know.
Laurie is spelled L-A-U-R-E-Y. That might help you a little bit. There's a great golden haze on the matter.
Oh,
the cowboy and the rancher should be friends. Okay, and the last one is...
probably why I tried to block it out.
Last one. This one I may not want to eat. Gruel, Gloria's gruel.
Well, it's Oliver, but why wouldn't you want to eat it?
Well, apologies. It's gruel. Doesn't sound good. Anyway, you can get information about this at geekyhostess.com. This book is scheduled to come out in September 1st. I will be buying it.
That's hilarious. I kind of love it.
All right, we're going to take another little break, and we're going to listen to the cast of Smokey Joe's Cafe. They came back together. They had their off-Broadway. They were 2018, I believe. And so this is the cast members from that production singing the finale of that show, Stand By Me. And it's on Zoom, and you can see it by watching or going to offstageonair.com. But let's give a listen to it.
When the night has come.
I just love that.
More good stuff. That's a great musical. It's a great musical.
Well, and they did this in response to Black Lives Matter. And all through it, they cut to protests and in a positive light. It had a very positive feel to it. So
it was positive on both sides. There was healing moments of protesters and police together, of protesting in general. It was a lot. And did you notice at the end that they cut to the actual curtain call from the performance in 2018?
Yes, that was great.
Mm-hmm. And it was superimposed in the background. And I noticed that it changed from real, like, everyday footage of news and happenings to the show. It was, done really well.
It was.
Not to mention the talent is like, boom.
Yeah. So a couple last things I want to talk about locally before we go to our last interview, which is Taji Senior. So Hill Country Community Theater in...
the Hill Country?
I believe they're in Buda. They were going to open and then they didn't open, and they are going to open again. They're opening again, which I think is crazy. But this is a group that has decided, much differently than the Austin theater companies, to go by the governor's guidelines versus the CDC guidelines. And they plan to open their production of the Savannah Sipping Society. It was originally set to open on April 23rd, and then it closed. They will keep it at 50% capacity. But if you want to get some information about that, you can go to the hcct.org. They're opening. I think that's crazy. Last Saturday, Hyde Park Theater, and I don't know if it's still available, had a showing of their production 2 years ago of the Realistic Joneses.
I know.
By Will Eno.
Yes, I loved seeing Jess's face.
I have to tell you, she is so... Did you see it?
Yes, I love it. She's so good.
She was a bright light in that. So it had Rebecca Robinson, Jessica Hughes, Ken Webster, and then I keep forgetting the other gentleman's name. But Jess Hughes, she's just delightful. She's just delightful to watch.
I love that. I mean, I love Rebecca too, but Jess and Rebecca are my peeps.
Yep. And then right now you can go to the Different Stages website and see Pygmalion that they did, I want to say 2013, 2004. I don't know. It was a while ago, but it was a great production.
Norman it starred
Amy Lewis, who is a lighting designer, as Eliza. She did a great job.
Right.
We spoke to Taji Senior about her new one-person play that's going to be opening outdoors in drive-in movie style and also streaming soon. So let's listen to that interview. Okay, Nicole, let's climb into the Zoom Perfecto machine and see who we... There's the sound effects. That's our Foley artist.
Yep.
And see who we have here. It's Taji Senior, who we haven't seen in a long time, along with Simone Emmett, who are doing a show here in Austin, Texas, called Amendment, The Making of an American Myth or the Slow Sipping of a Peacock Tea.
I love that. I love that.
Taji and Simone, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thanks. It's good to be here.
Okay, so I'm really excited about this show because not only are you doing it at Rogie Farm, outdoors, drive-in style, correct? Mm-hmm. You're also going to be live streaming it from Ground Floor Theater. So tell us about this show.
Taji, I'll let you take it away.
Poor Simone has like had to hear me say this like four times a day, for weeks now.
But I love it. I love hearing it every time. So it's just refreshing, just hearing like each kind of version of it and just how it grows and evolves. And in it, I'm like taking notes every time you do too.
You should just put it on a voice memo on your iPhone. And when somebody asks you, just put it up to the microphone. Yeah. Have yourself a little cocktail while it goes to town.
I should. It's kind of the explanation is like almost as long as the title, if that gives you.
Good. Let's hear it.
About 3 years ago, I had the opportunity, SVT was like, hey, we heard you were working on a solo show. Would you like to be part of our Works Progress Austin series? And I was like, sure. And I was not working on a solo show, but I... don't know how to say no to anything.
I love that.
Yeah. But at the time I had been thinking quite a bit about I'm almost always thinking about race and identity and those sorts of things. But to me, when we have conversations about race, and we have, as in this country in particular, and when we talk about like things like inequality and those sorts of things, especially through the lens of performance and theater, it tends to be really anecdotal, and like there's these tropes that you hear over and over, and I just was like, it feels like we're missing something. Like it either gets like super physically brutal talking about this, like, and we focus on the brutality of it, or it gets like, I don't know, but there's a lot that gets lost in the mix. And so for me, trying to cut through that noise, so often I'm like, well, what do we have written down? And you can point to the Constitution, right? Like you can, a lot of times when we talk about Black people in the Constitution, we talk about the Missouri Compromise, which is a little bit murky. And this is the thing that's like, oh, Black people are 3/5 of a human, which I don't think is how that compromise is supposed to be interpreted. But beyond that, the Constitution says from 1788 to 1808, the federal government will not tax the importation of human cargo. So the federal government in that way sanctions the trade of human beings. And that is a part of the Constitution. It is not until the 13th and 14th Amendments that Black people become human beings in the Constitution. And that is this country's legal document, and it names us property before it names us people. And to me, like, that is all the argument you need. That, like, that therein lies all the answers. And so I'd written this piece hoping to sort of get at that. I completely did not. I like missed the mark entirely. It was the first thing I'd ever really written. So I stepped away from it and went and did some other stuff. And recently, like in a, I don't know, a frenzied moment or whatever, I called Kate and was like, Kate, what if we do a live stream of Amendment? It's only 3 monologues. It's only like 20 minutes. It'll be so quick and so great. And we can donate the money to folks. And she was like, yeah. And then I proceeded to write an entire show. Over the past like 9 or 10 months, I've been reading Dorothy E. Roberts' book, Killing the Black Body, Race, Reproduction, and the Meaning of Liberty. And what she is sort of doing in that book is considering and examining the ways in which Black women are left off of feminist agendas, and then the ways in which reproductive rights are left off of civil rights agendas. So Black women and Black maternity kind of finds itself in this sort of like intersection of invisibility. And she begins her arguments, or she begins that exploration, by looking at America's first relationship to Black maternity. And if you think about it, Black women are the only group of people in this country whose initial relationship with this, with capitalism, was to reproduce the workforce.
Sure, and it was about property as well.
Right, precisely. You are not reproducing human beings, you were reproducing property, you were reproducing laborers. And that is grotesque and terrible and awful, and that could be a thing to fixate upon within itself. But what I so appreciate about Dorothy Roberts' work, and sort of the work of other Black feminist, womanist thinkers like Bell Hooks and Sadia Hartman, is the ways in which they sort of like contemplate these sort of everyday rebellions that these women would encounter. And like, we think about rebellions of enslaved people, and we think about like Nat Turner or Harriet Tubman or people escaping, but there were rebellions of people who lived and died on the plantation. Sure. And for some enslaved women, that sometimes that looks like use of contraception. Sometimes that looks like fighting against, you know, the men that they were made to breed with. In our particular story, we are looking at reproductive resistance through the lens of the use of abortifacients. So our main character is on trial because she is arguing, she's pregnant, and she is arguing that she should not be made to give birth to a child that will not be her own. And she does not want to be the matriarch of a lineage that is bound to the lie of the Constitution. Wow. And so that's the story that we are attempting to tell.
That is a lot to take in. So ignorance, is peacock tea an abortifacient?
It can be, yeah. So there is this, and I never remember what her exact title is, but she is a 17th century, for lack of a better term, botanist and scientist, German woman. She goes over to Suriname, which is at the time under Dutch rule, is currently being colonized by the Dutch, and she discovers the peacock flower, which we know now as the pride of Barbados, and she documents in her like sort of like anthropological studies that the enslaved women of Suriname are using this flower as an abortifacient. They're making teas out of it, and so on and so forth.
I feel so ignorant, because of course, as soon as I saw peacock tea, I was not thinking of a flower. Simone, how are you approaching it as a director?
Yeah, so I'm taking sort of spiel and description that Taji has of this of this play. I'm taking different things that are standing out to me. So as we're talking about sort of reproductive resistance and the subtleties within those, we're taking that and having subtleties within like little things that our characters will do in the play, little small sipping moments, little sort of subtle designs in our poster, the ways that we like bring in subtleties and softness for something so big and so that has just been so under the radar. I didn't know so much of this before. Taji just explained it all to me and shared with me this part of history that I never even knew about. And it's something that can so easily be swept under the rug. So we want to bring it to light while also still sort of keeping those subtleties. We want to use a lot of the inspiration and art that Taji shared with us. So we'll be utilizing some sort of shadow work and light and movement and sort of building and deconstructing of the set. So this is a solo show, so it will just be Taji on stage. But I sort of have this inclination that she will not be standing still ever. We'll constantly be moving. And I think there's something really beautiful in that. I really want to make sure that we're, I think, hitting the nail on that and really emphasizing this part of history that's been so swept under the rug and so overlooked, and sort of really hitting on that intersection that Taji was talking about.
Sure. And that intersection is actually one that, you know, I've just been educated just in this conversation. So you said, Taji, when you talked to Kate, and I should say Kate is with Salvage Vanguard, who is producing this piece. You said that you had three monologues and then you rewrote it. So what is it now?
Not three monologues. It's Without giving away too much, I'll say it's a trial of sorts. Mm-hmm. What Madir, our main character, is effectively doing is sort of like calling these historical figures and events to the stand and cross-examining them to sort of like make her argument. So this is like she's walking us through her varying arguments through these different incidents, some in very recent memory and some from long, long ago. As Simone was talking, a thing that I was thinking about was, you know, we talk about the ways in which enslaved women would give birth to children and not know, you know, if they would be able to protect them or nurture them and love them or whatever. And I think that like that uncertainty is not exclusive to, you know, Black women, but I think it is higher for Black women. Like, Black women now don't know that if the children that they give birth to, if they will outlive them. Because I think it gets really easy to look at Black and white photos and to look at history as this thing that we are so far removed from without thinking about how that lives in us. I'm not that far removed. I'm 31. I'm not that far removed from my enslaved ancestors.
No.
And I'm certainly not far removed from the possibility of giving birth to a child that I don't know how it will live or survive in a police state.
Yeah, and we're and in our current environment, we're constantly reminded of it right now. And then you take all the things that are happening in front of mind right now, and then you add on top of that the mortality rate for Black women, and there's just
There's so much stuff
on top of your shoulders and behind your back. And I would think it would kind of make looking forward sort of difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I did a show last year in New York, and the way I ended that show was like, I don't know. I had nothing comforting to say to you. I don't know that this gets any better. If I'm being completely honest, I don't think that it gets any better for me, if I have children. I don't think that in our lifetimes this resolves itself in any real way. This moment that's happening right now is really important, but this anger is not sustainable. So, you know, you just try to move the needle as forward as much as you can, but I am under no illusions that this gets quote unquote better. It gets different, maybe less violent. Maybe it takes a pause in my lifetime, but it doesn't resolve itself. And that's the reality, and that's okay, but that's what I understand when I show up to work.
Well, first, I truly hope you're wrong about that. Well, because I think what's happened in the past month is that white people like me are seeing things that we haven't necessarily seen before.
Yeah, I don't think people will forget, and I don't even question the, like, the sincerity of the moment. I think the moment is real. I think what people are feeling and experiencing is real. I think the ways in which people want to be different is real. But what I'm saying is that, like, what that actually caused, like, if I came to somebody and said, who you are, who you know yourself to be is predicated upon a lie and you have to give that up so someone else can have something, for sustainable change to happen, we have to deal with the fact that whiteness is a construct, gender is a construct, sexuality is a construct. All of these things are made up and tied to labor and capitalism. And I say that as a cisgendered heterosexual person, and I say that with, like, as much awareness as I have. I can't imagine to someone who's just now coming to this that it hasn't cost them anything until this moment, that now they're going to be like, oh, you know what, let me deconstruct my entire identity.
But you're doing what Nicole likes to call artivism. And what we love about theater professionals and artists in general is that we try to buck the status quo. We try to hold a mirror up to society, and we try to help tip that balance over to the point that we can't stop it from tipping over. So I'm really excited about seeing this show. Amendment, The Making of an American Myth, or The Slow Sipping of a Peacock Tea. I do have to, before we went live, we were talking about the length of that title. And I believe, again, before we went live, I suggested an acronym. Let's go back and just listen to that right now. Have you tried to see what the acronym is?
Oh, no.
Lisa, I feel like you just summoned something.
So, I don't know. It's there for you to use or not use. Tell us when this is going to happen and how we can get information.
Yeah, so we will sort of just jumped in there. But our live stream performance is the first performance. That's going to be on August 21st. And then we have two performances that follow it. Those are our drive-in live performances that will be outdoors in Austin at Rogie Ranch on the 22nd of August and the 23rd of August.
Great. And they start at 8:30 p.m. here locally. And folks could get information at the Salvage Vanguard website, salvagevanguard.org. I am really excited about this. Yeah. I'm excited to have it in my home at Ground Floor Theater. And I'm excited to have it at Rogie Farm. I have to tell you, Nicole, I don't think you know this, but I went out to Rogie Farm. Actually, it's Rogie Farm. I keep forgetting the proper pronunciation of it, to take some photographs for a video I was doing. And this woman who obviously owned the place looked at me suspiciously. And I started walking over and I said, I'm Lisa Sheps. And she looks right back at me and she says, I know who you are. This is a woman who owns the ranch that lived across the street from my first theater.
Oh,
her and her lovely daughter, Pearl.
You told me you bumped into the woman who used to live across because I said, oh, play. But you didn't tell me it was at Rogie Farm. Okay, yeah. I love a full circle.
Yeah,
me too.
I love a full circle.
Well, I'm so looking forward to seeing it. And I'm so happy to have y'all on the show.
Yes, thank you for coming on. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much for having us. It's like if anyone knows me, knows that I do not like the city of Los Angeles and I miss Austin terribly.
For you.
Jazz hands.
I'm so grateful to be back with Austin folk. I know Simone from Austin and she is a blessing to my life, and as are you and Nicole. So thank you so much.
Thank you
so much for having us and being able to talk about this show. We really appreciate it. And
okay. Taji Senior and Simone Emmett, thank you so much for joining us on Offstage and On the Air. I am so looking forward to this show.
That was a really awesome interview.
And I'll definitely see it because we're going to be streaming it from Ground Floor Theater.
You get to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it for today. That's it for this week. We did it again, Nicole.
We did another Zoom Zoom.
Zoom Zoom in the room room. So stand by for whatever's next. And then we'll be back next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air.
Ciao.
Ciao, everybody. Ciao, Alessio.
Ciao.